This month's author podcast brings to you Professor Matt Costa from the University of Warwick, and we are going to be talking about the draft trial. So can we start, Matt, by asking you, why was the draft trial set up like it was?
Oh, it's a good question. So a broken wrist, distal radius fractures, one of the most common injuries that occur in the UK and across the Western world. And despite that, it's an area where there are many, many unanswered questions. So why we picked the distal radius fracture trial to answer that particular question was, you know, it's a perfectly good statement. There's so many other things we could have done. We wanted something that would engage the surgeons because to some degree, draft was a test case for running trauma trials in general. And so we picked surgical interventions as the aim for the trial. In terms of why the specific interventions for draft, well, the survey work and the pilot studies we did beforehand suggested that the two most common interventions in the UK were KY fixation and volar locking plate fixation for the dorsally displaced fractures. So that was why we went for that particular question as part of draft. But you're quite right, we could have addressed a whole series of other questions in a trial for distal radius fractures.
Okay, great. Thank you. And what did you learn about UK orthopaedics?
Well, as I mentioned, it was kind of a test case, really. Together with the AIM ankle trial that Keith Willett ran from Oxford and the PROFA, proximal humerus trial that Amar Ranga ran from Durham, DRAFT was the first of the big multi-centre studies funded by our National Institute of Health Research. So I was very nervous, we all were, that we would be able to deliver this study. And to my great relief and great surprise, I have to say, the UK trauma body got together and really sort of pulled together to pull this trial off. So we actually recruited ahead of time and ahead of target, which is almost unprecedented for health technology assessment trials. So we learned basically that the orthopaedic trauma community could deliver multi-centre clinical trials on the sort of scale that historically only the cancer people and the cardiologists could do.
What was it you did that made that happen?
I think we worked very hard with the setup for the trial. So the whole idea of this particular study was to reflect clinical practice as was. So we built the trial procedures around what surgeons normally do in their clinical practice. And we had dedicated research associates recruiting the patients and collecting the data. So for the surgeon's point of view, it was an easy trial in that they just did their normal job other than just randomising the patients beforehand. Having said that, it's still a leap of faith for any surgeon to agree to randomise patients. This uncertainty is not something we're comfortable with, and nor often are our patients. So it was still a great credit to the orthopaedic trauma surgeons involved. Over 230 surgeons in the UK were involved in the trial, that they agreed to take part and actually put their time into the study.
Who were the research associates?
So mostly physiotherapists or nurses, but employed specifically to collect data from clinical trials. So we're very lucky in the UK that we have the Clinical Research Network, which funds part of that. Mm. And we also had some funding as part of the trial to actually support recruitment and then follow up with the patients. And those people were absolutely key. They put a huge amount of work in to actually get the data and the good quality data that made us made a fairly robust conclusion from the study.
Great. Okay. So how long did it take from beginning of the idea to the end of the study and then publication?
Yeah, about 10 years in total. So in order to get the large grants that you need to run these big multi-centre studies, you need an awful lot of preparatory work. You don't just go with an idea and they fund it. So I mean, in total, yes, best part of 10 years. We actually started the main trial in 2010. And the results were published in this year, 2014. So I guess 4 years for the delivery of the study. But from inception through to the final results, that was a good 10 years' work.
What was it that took most of the time, the going for grants, etc.?
Yeah. So you need to build a body of evidence to establish that this is an important question, that the National Institute of Health Research should fund it. And then the process of having your grant reviewed and then giving you a contract and then starting the trial takes over a year in itself. So it's a long and complicated process even before the study, you know, actually try and get the study off the ground. Fortunately, because of the hard work of the team at Warwick Clinical Trials Unit, we were able to hit the ground running. So we had most of the preparation, all of the approvals in place before the actual grant was awarded. So we could actually make a very early start. And that stood us in good stead throughout the recruitment period of the trial.
Great, okay. And what looking back with the benefit of hindsight, what were the difficulties that you faced?
Yeah, so we wanted the study to reflect practice across the National Health Service. So historically, most trials in this area, and indeed across orthopaedics in general, are run from specialist centres by particularly interested, enthusiastic, expert surgeons. But actually, that's fine, and that gives you some information, but it doesn't tell you how those interventions perform across the entirety of the NHS. So in selecting the sites and the surgeons that were involved, we wanted some specialist surgeons, but also some general trauma surgeons, some specialist hand units, and some general trauma units. So choosing and selecting the centres that took part was we did that, spent a lot of time getting that right, to the point where we think we've got a result, but we're pretty sure we've got a result that reflects practice across the NHS. So that was probably the biggest difficulty and the thing we spent most time on. The other key factor was making the paperwork straightforward for the patients, really. And the team spent an awful lot of time, very, very simple things, just about formatting questionnaires and making the booklet straightforward and as short as we could possibly get away with. So, a massive number of factors, but I guess they were the most important ones.
Okay, great. And all the data that you managed to gather, what does it tell us?
Well, we got for the first time a really interesting snapshot of what happens to patients with a broken wrist in the UK. So we had data on over 12,000 patients that were screened. Now, of course, the majority of those didn't need any surgical interventions and were children or other types of fracture, but it actually gave us some information about how they're treated across the UK. So that in itself was useful. In terms of the actual trial itself, we discovered that, to our surprise, the traditional intervention of KY fixation actually performed just as well as the more modern, more technological volar locking plate fixation, which was, a surprise to me. We set the study up to investigate the superiority of the plates because the existing literature suggests that they were better in terms of short-term functional outcomes and radiographic outcomes as well. So when we got the results of the trial, I was as surprised as anyone to find that actually the traditional K-wire fixation intervention provided exactly the same functional outcome for the patients as the more expensive locking plate fixation. And because the trial was large and reflected practice across the UK, we were able to exclude a clinically meaningful difference between the groups. So what does that mean? Well, in clinical trials, you can never say that two interventions are absolutely the same. But if the confidence intervals are very narrow, which they were with this sort of large trial, we can say safely that even if there is a difference between the interventions, the patients would never notice that difference. So a very clear result. The other key finding, and which actually is the thing that will change policy, is that although we found there was no difference in outcome between the two interventions, there was a very large difference in the cost of the interventions. So in terms of cost effectiveness, it was actually clear that we'd save an awful lot of money for the NHS if we used the wire fixation instead of the more expensive plates for the same result for the patients. So on a simple estimate of the current numbers of volar locking plates done for this indication, if only half of them were converted to wires, the NHS would save in excess of £20 million year on year just by changing the type of implant we use. So a very important result for the way that the NHS delivers care for this important group of patients.
Okay, so that would be a huge saving. If I ask you the question, how do you think the data should change practice, what would you say?
Well, I think it's clear that we were using volar locking plates that weren't always necessary. So my firm conclusion from the study is that we should be using more K-wires to fix these fractures if they need to be fixed at all, and that's the next question, really. Having said that, it's very important that people understand that we excluded the most severe intra-articular fractures, so the C3 fractures, where the joint surface was so badly disrupted that the surgeon felt they had to open the joint surface to reduce it into an anatomical position. In those cases, there's still obviously an indication for using plates in that group of patients. So what we're not saying is that everyone should have their distal radius fixed with K-wires. We're just suggesting that actually most patients can be very safely fixed with K-wires and they don't need the more expensive locking plates. And also the surgery takes longer with the locking plates, so it saves a lot of patient time in the operating theatre as well.
So Matt, how has the study impacted on your practice as an orthopaedic surgeon?
So for me personally, it has changed my practice. I was quite a big fan of volar locking plate fixation for dorsally displaced distal radius fractures. But on the back of the results of the study, fairly definitively, I'm now happy that K-wires offer the same functional outcome for the patients. So for all of the extra articular fractures, if I believe the patient would benefit from fixation, I will use K-wires.
In my hands, normally three, depending on the fracture configuration, interfocal through the styloid and either interfocal or Kapanji dorsally. For the intra-articular fractures, the great majority of them, I believe, can actually be treated perfectly adequately with KY fixation as well. So I do manipulation and do an assessment of the reduction of the articular surface, and if I believe that's adequate with a closed reduction, I will fix those with KYs as well these days, reserving volar locking plates for those when I'm opening up the volar side of the wrist anyway. So that's how it's changed my practice in the light of the results of the trial. I hope that most surgeons will take a similar view and change their practice as well. I suspect that the policymakers will inevitably get hold of this information, so there will be a push from policymakers to change practice, but it would be far better if the surgeons make the first move and actually respond to the evidence, and not just for the draft trial, but for all of these multi-centre high-quality trials, that we should make our changes to clinical practice ourselves rather than being pushed into it.
So in terms of what's next after this, well, we've now established a very successful network of surgeons and research associates collecting data for trials in orthopaedic trauma, which is a massive step forward. And each of the subsequent trials becomes easier because we all get more experienced at delivering these. There are now six health technology assessment funded multi-centre trials in trauma currently underway and some more in the pipeline, which is great. Follow on from the distal radius acute fracture fixation trial, the next big question for me is trying to help surgeons and patients decide who actually benefits from fixation at all. So there are a series of questions to answer there, but clearly whether or not we need to fix all of these distal radius fractures is the next key question in my mind. Beyond distal radius fractures, we've got current trials looking at broken tibias and hip fractures and scaphoid fractures. So really, surgeons, no matter what their subspecialty interest, there's opportunities to get involved in these trials now, and an increasing number of surgeons are wanting to do so, which is just fantastic for the research network and also for patient care in the UK.
Matt, thanks so much for taking the time and trouble to help us with this.